This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready, man?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
All right, let's go. It is the Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app. You ever have that feeling of like, I'm asleep, it's time to go, and then you just sort of like turn it on? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, pretty much every day.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That was the last like 15 seconds of my life right there.
Well, welcome in.
Thank you. It's good.
I mean,
to be
I started
here.
The day by saying, oh, happy Thursday.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
No, it's a little day game matinee Wednesday, getaway day. Not for the Mariners. They're going to be sticking around because they've got four against Oakland coming up. But getaway day for Baltimore, and so a little matinee baseball. You going over with me? Are you over there today?
I will be there today.
Nice. Yeah, sounds like the whole station's going over today.
Everyone, yeah.
I mean, big day.
Bump and Stacey get to do their Bump's first show live from the stadium. I mean, he's probably done some fill-in work, but officially their
first. So that'll be kind of exciting.
And then I know that we'll be hanging out with everybody from the station today. I'm excited.
I am as well. All right, so what are we going to see? We got to see a win yesterday. Were you aware that Phil Nevin's kid played for the Orioles?
Not until this morning.
I mean, I figured it out last night, or maybe I saw something about it before the game yesterday. I didn't know it while we were talking, and I'd heard the name. You know, I'd seen Tyler Nevin before, I feel like, but I'm not sure I pieced it all together that was Phil Nevin's kid. And the irony, or just, I guess, oddness, coincidence of seeing him right after the whole Angels brouhaha on Sunday was kind of bizarre. And he actually like came up with a couple of pretty big plays. Like he made like a couple of nice picks at third base last night.
Yeah, picked JP on one really good one. I never put that together automatically because you see so many similar last names in baseball.
Right.
I never just immediately draw the line. I feel like every time I do that, I'm wrong.
Right.
Then I saw Shannon's tweet this morning. So that's Phil Nevin's son at third base.
So strange. Right. I mean, just what are the chances?
It's fun timing.
Right? I mean, just the way all of that worked out. I guess he didn't play in the first game of the series, but he certainly did last night. And that was, do you think there's a conversation there with like the guys of like, hey, so you tried to fight my dad yesterday. How was that?
You'd have to believe there was one of those, or at least yesterday, because, you know, they all warm up and see each other to know. I'm assuming that conversation happened at some point.
You ever get into a fight with your dad? I don't mean where you fight your dad.
No, not physical fight. No.
Like you and your dad are like, okay, let's go.
No. I've never really.
Have you ever seen your dad in a position where you might need to or want to get his back?
Yes. An opposing baseball coach once started chirping at all of the dads because they're all of our coaches in small towns. It's just the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, wow, this is going to be. And two of their coaches were All-American wrestlers.
Oh, whoa.
So I was ready for it. And actually, you know who the coach was that was chirping? Former Yankee Steve Howe was chirping. He moved to Whitefish, Montana.
Weird.
He was coaching his kid in Little League Baseball. I was chirping at our coaches, and I thought I was going to see Steve Howe get beat up by one of our wrestling
so
coaches.
So if your dad had gotten into it, like if it had looked like it was getting ready to get physical, what would you have done?
Well, at that point, I think I was 12 years old.
I probably
sort of broke down and really upset. But yeah, I mean, I've considered the option before of like if I have to go to I don't want to say full on brawl punches, I'm willing to do it.
Well, sure. So it's funny. I only brought it up because years ago playing softball, my dad nearly got into it with somebody, and I found myself like, you know, I'm charging in from center field pretty quickly because it's your dad. Like, I don't know that there's anybody whose back you're going to try to get more than your own dad.
So, I mean, your dad plays a ton of softball.
Yes.
He lives, it splits between Boston and Phoenix.
Yep.
So you were in one of those cities and
oh, this
had
was
enough
years
time?
Ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was years ago.
So you were
I was either in college or right out. I must have been in college when it happened.
And full of a lot more fume and
sure.
fuel and
vim, vigor, et cetera. I would have known who John Boy was, obviously, at that stage
yes.
in my life. Yeah, no, I went, we were playing softball. I've probably told this story before. And there was my dad's a really good softball player. So there was a line drive. He was playing, I think, second base, and he made a nice catch on a line drive. And some guy from the other side just yells something like, hey, look what I found.
Yeah.
And my dad who's generally, I wouldn't say he's mild-mannered, but he's certainly not a fighter. Like, I mean, I've never seen him in a fight in my entire life or heard about anything close. The only fight he's ever told me about was when he got sucker-punched by a guy named Roy Armstrong when he was in, I think, middle school. And the first time my mom ever saw him, my dad was lying face down on the ground, basically out cold because he just got knocked out.
Well, no.
I know. They started dating a couple of years later. Anyway, so my dad does not like when anybody questions a nice play like that. Like, hey, I made a nice play. So the guy says, look what I found. And my dad's like, hey, what did you say? Well, the biggest dude I've ever seen stands up and is like, I said, look what I found. Like, oh, no.
Oh, just checking. Okay.
Oh, geez. And he starts like walking up over the fence. Like, all right, now it's like it's a low fence. I don't mean he like scaled the thing, but he like stands up over this little fence and starts walking out onto the field. We all start charging in from wherever we are. And it's like, I'm going to have to get my dad's back in this whole thing. But thankfully, everything kind of cooled down, and we were okay.
And your mom wasn't there for that game?
Oh, heck no.
Okay.
No, that would have been a problem.
A weird car ride home. How are you going to explain this?
Oh, yeah. No, we didn't. I don't even know that we've ever told her that story. So, yeah, no, my dad, big softball guy. In fact, you know, he had a heart attack, I think I've mentioned, a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And he's doing okay. For those of you who hadn't heard the story, he had a heart attack. He was very lucky and was next to a fire station, got him right to the hospital. And so he's doing okay. But he went to his softball game. He's not playing yet. But he went and was just keeping score, right? I think he might be the manager also. And so he's like, just keeping score and hanging out with the guys because that's what he likes to do.
Yeah.
And I guess there was a bad call at third base and he instantly jumped up to complain about the call. And sure enough, all the guys in his team are like, what are you doing? Larry, sit down. And so, yeah, I'm curious to see how he does dealing with this new reality.
This isn't a beer league softball league from the sounds of it.
No.
Yeah, they take it pretty seriously.
This is Northeast softball. It's very serious. Yeah. Now, they're very old. They have like 30 guys on the field now. I went to one of their games. It's like they've got 5 infielders and I think 4 outfielders.
Ooh.
Dude, there's like 1,000 people. It's like watching a T-ball game where it's just or a kickball or something when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Because these guys are all old. Like they're like, you know, they don't cover a lot of ground. So in order to not have the score be like, you know, 50 to 45 every game, they got to put a lot of guys out there.
Oh, yeah, I like that story.
It's quite the scene. Anyway, I had a whole plan. I was going to tell you about yesterday, and I'll do more of it at 7 o'clock. But here's what I liked about yesterday's win for the Mariners. There were 2 guys that we talked about who really needed to step up their game in order for the Mariners to kind of get to where they were supposed to be. And both of them were the key participants in yesterday's win.
True.
Robbie Ray, Jesse Winker, right? I mean, those were, for better or for worse, your 2 biggest offseason additions. You need those guys to be something close to what they've been. For the last, 4 starts, is it now?
Mm-hmm.
Robbie Ray has been exactly what you thought he would be. Not throwing the same arsenal you expected because he's added this 2-seamer, which has completely changed his entire game, but he's been the pitcher. 27 innings, 2 runs. That's Cy Young worthy kind of stuff. That's what you expected out of Robbie Ray, not having this 1 random inning where he gets destroyed and looks like a chump and the other 7 where he looks great. This is what you expected from Robbie Ray, and he has been fantastic. It's been awesome. Jesse Winker, for the last couple of weeks, this is the Jesse Winker you expected. Hitting the ball hard, getting into fights with random coaches and managers and players on the, you know. But this is the guy that you paid for. This is the guy you gave up one of the better prospects in your system, Brandon Williamson, for before the season began. I think I was looking at Churchill's numbers. I forget what the exact cutoff date is for Winker, but basically, like, since he started hitting, he's got a 900 OPS. That's what you paid for. That's what he's been for the last 3 or 4 years. That's the Jesse Winker that you're supposed to get. So, look, unfortunately, it coincides, or maybe fortunately, with Ty France going down and some of the other issues they've had. But if you can start to get this group, you know, looking the way it's supposed to again, yeah, you're starting to see the Mariner offense that maybe you paid for at the very beginning of the year. Meanwhile, I mentioned Ty France. He's going to join us today. How about that? 8:30 this morning, Ty France is going to join us, talk a little bit about where he's at. Whether or not he's going to go to the All-Star game. Hopefully he will, but he probably could use some of our help, so we'll kind of talk through some of that. We'll do that at 8:30 this morning. Before we get to any of it, let's run through the game yesterday. Lots of good news for the Mariners in a 2-0 win, and one piece of bad news that could lead to a major roster change. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it's been quite a week for Jesse Winker. He started to hit on the road. He hit first in the Battle of Anaheim, was hit with a 7-game suspension, was delivered a pepperoni pizza, spoke out against Phil Nevin and the umpires, and then finally, last night, came up with the big hit the team absolutely needed.
Here's the stretch and the 0-2. It's on the way to Winker. Swing and a fly ball deep into the gap in right center field. Hayes going back to the one. He tracked near the wall. Leaps up. And this one is off the top of the fence. Extra bases. Crawford will score. Julio rounding third. He'll score. Jesse Winker in at second base with a two-out, two-run double. And the Mariners have the lead. 2-0 here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
Jesse Winker just barely in at second base with a two-out double after thinking that ball was gone. Turns out that was all they would get and all they would need. Paul Sewald closing the door. Mariners win a very tight one, 2-0, thanks to Winker's eighth inning heroics. A little credit, though, for the way that whole thing got started. Julio Rodriguez with a man on first, hitting a line drive ground ball back up the box, hit the pitcher. And his ability to race down the line, jump and leap out of the way, knock the ball accidentally out of the first baseman's hands, all leads to that moment. So credit to Julio as well. Now, the other part of the story is Robbie Ray. And he was awesome yesterday, has been awesome really for the last four starts. He spun seven innings of one hit, shutout ball, eight strikeouts. He's now allowed just two runs in his last 27 innings. That coincides, by the way, and not surprisingly, with the addition of this new two-seam fastball. It looks like a different pitcher and has been great.
Major league pitching and defensive game for sure. One-hit shutouts are hard to come by in this league, and quite an effort by Robbie Ray. Continues to keep rolling along. The last four starts have just been electric, what he's been able to do, and really a credit to him to make adjustments as quick as he has and then carried into the games. And he did a heck of a job tonight.
Honestly, Ray is so good with his two-seam fastball and now throwing three pitches. I can't understand why he wasn't doing it before. It's one of those things where you're like, wait, this guy survived with just two pitches? Most major league starters need a third pitch. He was that good last year to win a Cy Young Award with basically two pitches. Now, finally, he adds in the third pitch, opens up the whole plate. It seems like it's something he should have been doing all along, but I guess obviously he hadn't really needed it to right now. Whatever. Credit to him. He has been, exactly as Scott just said, electric for the last four starts.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, I got some injury updates with the Mariners. Some good news on Kyle Lewis and Mitch Haniger, not necessarily so on Taylor Trammell. So Lewis and Haniger both playing catch on the field before the game. Haniger was actually taking a few swings. I think I saw Lewis as well. Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider, spoke to Lewis, who said he has been dealing with multiple symptoms after the concussion, but that he's starting to feel a little bit better. He's going to need some sort of a rehab stint before returning, although that may be sooner rather than later. Haniger, meanwhile, says he's still on his original target, 10 to 12 weeks since the injury, so we'll still be waiting on him. Now, as for Trammell, lifted from the game yesterday after running hard to first on a double play ball, which of course came with the bases loaded because that seems to be the Mariners' thing this year. Anyway, that's a side note. You got to remember he missed this month this year with a hamstring injury. So he came out with an injury to the same hamstring. We'll see how he responds, but it does sound like an IL stint would be likely. Now, if he misses some time, could that change the timeline on Jared Kelnick, right? We know the team has been steadfast about wanting him to take the time in Tacoma he needs and not come up until he's absolutely ready. But that's a lot easier to say when Trammell's been playing some pretty good ball for you as a left-handed platoon player in right field. What do you do if Trammell is now going to be out for 10 days? Does that change some of the timeline on Jared Kelnick? I don't know. We'll see. Ty France, meanwhile, remains second in the All-Star voting behind Vlad Jr. It's unlikely he's going to pass the Blue Jay star, but staying in second place should absolutely help his cause to be added to that team, even if he's hurt. We will talk to Ty about all of that and more coming up at 8:30 this morning.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
So what's the price for DK Metcalf? The market continues to gain comps as Terry McLaurin becomes the latest wide receiver to get a big new contract extension. He signed a $74 million extension to stay in Washington, a number that puts him just under $24 million a year. It's a three-year deal. So interesting that Daniel Snyder could sign off on that from his yacht while avoiding appearing before Congress after being subpoenaed. It's interesting what you can and can't do when you are just otherwise occupied. Anyway, as for the wide receiver market, the numbers are certainly huge. It'd be hard to imagine DK is going to accept a dollar less than McLaurin, who is very good. I wish Moore was here today. She'll be back tomorrow. That's sort of like her guy. She always brings up Terry McLaurin whenever we're talking wide receivers. Anyway, very good player, but maybe not quite as freaky or as unique as DK is. So, look, the Seahawks have made their bet on this one. They didn't trade him before the draft. I would still expect it to get done. And one other note, another future Hall of Famer headed to Seattle. Center Tina Charles is signed with the Storm for the remainder of the season. She hopes to give them a lift. Recently asked out of Phoenix after becoming frustrated with her role on that team and elected to sign here. Going to join a pretty star-studded lineup. Sue Bird, Jew Loy, Breanna Stewart. Yes, the Storm, though, are currently in fourth place. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Mike Salk Show.
A big thing that happened in last night's game that's going to get overlooked because of Robbie Ray's performance and Jesse Winker's double to win it was that big out that our new first baseman, Carlos Santana, made at first base.
Yeah, how about that play, huh?
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
I mean, I don't know whether they got him for his defense, but in that moment, a defensive play.
Yeah, he did. In that moment, it was big.
You were a third baseman.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure you sympathize with any third baseman when that throw gets away from you a little bit.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Kind of hoping the first baseman helps you out.
I can't tell you how much anxiety I still have when I see every third baseman try to get like a last rushed throw off, like a last second rush throw, because I know how hard that is. Sometimes it's your best play because it's just pure instincts. Mm-hmm. You can't overthink it. You just dive, get up, and throw as hard as you can. But others, like a short hop, a weird hop, a little bit in between, maybe it's hit really hard, but right to you, you have that extra second to kind of take your time, and you float one over first base. Man, that hurts.
Yeah.
That moment, too.
Well, and you're just hoping your first baseman can help you out, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, hopefully he's got a good play in him. Hopefully he can pick it on a short hop. Hopefully he can jump up. I love the play he made yesterday. It's one of my favorite sort of underrated baseball defensive plays is the jump up, make a catch, wheel around, and tag the guy on the way by.
Right, because too many first basemen will try to keep their foot on the bag to get the out, and it sails over the head, and now,
right.
Now the guy goes to second. It's like, just jump, let him be safe at first.
Not bad for a guy who came up as a catcher.
Totally, yeah, and I mean, he has no rapport with Suarez, right?
Nope.
Like, he's no rapport with any of the infielders.
Never played with any of them.
He doesn't know what any of those balls do when they throw. Maybe this guy's got a natural run on one. Maybe this guy likes to throw to the dirt.
Other than JP, he played with in Philly.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So he may have...
He came over in that trade, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so he may have a little JP knowledge.
Interesting.
For whatever that's worth. No, good point. It was a nice play. You know what? There were a lot of nice defensive plays in that game last night.
True.
Right? I mean, Julio had a nice play. What's his name? Cedric Mullins had, I think, a couple of nice plays. Tyler Nevin had a nice play.
Cedric Mullins is a good player. I mean, maybe he's just played really well against the Mariners, but he is a good player.
I tell you, I watched that Orioles team. It seems like they're going to be good. They got some dudes that, at least when I see them, look like they've got something to them.
Well, they're also like right behind the Mariners in the farm team rankings the last couple of years.
Yeah, they got some guys, it seems like, that are on their way where you're like, okay, in a couple of years, maybe Baltimore makes a run. On the other hand, their owner probably screws the whole thing up. So we'll see what goes
good
on.
Good pitching duel, nonetheless.
All right. We're pretty much done talking brawl today, I promise. Although, obviously, I'll ask Jeff Passan about it at 7:30 because I got to get his take on the suspensions. And I got to find out what Ty France was doing during it all when we talked to him, because I don't think he was on the road with the team. So what do? You're watching that game. Do you jump up? Are you ready to go? Are you sorry you missed it? But he's also such a friendly guy. So I got a lot of questions for Ty France when we talk to him at 8:30. Joe Fan next, though. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, Joe Fang going to join us here in just a moment or two. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. Joe, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. This has been awesome. I mean, I've been talking about this essentially nonstop since Sunday midday. Like, I love this stuff. Well, I live for it. It's entertaining and it leads to great conversation about the unwritten rules and who's at fault and all of it. I think it's great.
I think it makes for fun conversation. I think, you know, what makes it less fun is when you end up on the short end of the stick. And I don't think there's any debating the Mariners will feel the consequences of the suspensions more than the Angels, certainly, when you talk about a closer and an interim manager compared to, you know, a handful of the team's most important position players, in addition to all the injuries. I think when you look back to what happened against Houston about a month ago or whatever, that the coolest part of that was Julio hit a bomb right after the scuffle. And, you know, so when you don't have that to, you know, circle back to, and then you get blasted by the Orioles, it does take the wind out of the sails of, oh man, it is cool that this team has a backbone and sticks up for itself and has guys, you know, that play for each other. I, you know, that all means a lot, but at the end of the day, like, you don't want it to end up, you know, being a detriment to your team. And it's for me, it's hard to argue that, you know, it was an ultimate net positive for Seattle.
What should baseball have done?
Well, it's tough because suspensions are going to come. And I think most of Jesse Winker's suspension was because of the double bird to the crowd. I think that was the most significant part of it.
I thought so, too. But it doesn't say that in the release from Major League Baseball. The release says, I thought the same thing as you. The release says simply, Jesse Winker has received a 7-game suspension for actions that caused the incident and for fighting. It doesn't mention the double bird.
Interesting. What drives me nuts, too, is just this could have been so easily prevented. If Jesse Winker gets hit and the umpire does his job and says, hey, once, you're gone, out of here, this is all avoided. And there's maybe some chirping, and maybe Phil Nevin, you know, gets upset and comes out and wants to talk to the umpire and say, well, you know, you'll play the, you know, the victim, whatever. But it just, I can't for the life of me figure out why Jesse Winker gets dot when everyone knows it's coming. The whole Mariners dugout telling him it's coming. And Jesse Winker's like looking at him like, dude, like he's not even upset. He's not even looking at Wants like it's Wants' fault. He's just like, what are we doing here? And Scott's like, he's gone, right? And all he does is point him to first base and kind of usher him that way, as opposed to tossing Wants immediately. And I don't know how you give him the benefit of the doubt there, but to me, it's just so egregious how it was handled from an umpire standpoint. That, and then also from the Angels' side, I get them being upset about the pitch at Trout's head, and I get saying, "Hey, unintentional or intentional, you don't come near his head. There will be repercussions." But it should have been over after they threw it, Julio. Like, that's it. You had your shot, you missed it, and now you got to move on. And the fact that it wasn't is also really frustrating, especially now when you consider that, A, they lost the game, then they get blasted by the Orioles, and the suspensions are far more significant for Seattle.
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of that. It was Bush League to go after him a second time. The strange thing about the umpiring is generally we're critical of the umpires because they want to be too in control, that they are too quick to make judgments. And in this case, it seemed like the guy froze, and rather than, you know, declaring, you're out of here, like they always do in those situations, he paused and like was unsure of himself, and that allowed everything to go down.
Yeah, I agree. And the warnings were issued. They already had the meeting in the first inning. They had already talked about this. I can't wrap my head around how that wasn't, you're right, he just froze, and I don't know why, and I wish we got to hear more from umpires after the game. And I think at least NFL reporters are, you know, you have to be made available to a pool reporter every game should something go down. You know, the lack of accountability for umpires is really infuriating, and you know, this situation where, again, especially how it ultimately turned out, the steps leading up to it were also avoidable, and you know, the Mariners end up losing their top, and you know, how Julio gets 2 games, you know, it's frustrating. It's so, you know, hopefully, you know, you look at the appeals that will end up benefiting Seattle. Maybe Julio's goes from 2-1, and you have some of that. But, you know, it's like, gosh, I wish Scott Service got 5 games if you take away J.P. Crawford's and Julio's. But I know it doesn't work like that. And yeah, so I think it was really kind of fun in the moment of like, yeah, this team is easy to root for, and there's a lot of players on it that are easy to root for. But as the, you know, things kind of play themselves out, the ripple effects were not super positive.
Do you think they should have done anything differently?
Suspension-wise?
No, do you think the Mariners should have done something different? Is there any other way they should have handled it?
you know, it's super easy to say days after the fact, but I understand, you know, them wanting to stand up for themselves. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I think at some point you have to, you know, say, okay, you're going to stick up for your guy clearly, but enough's enough. You know, we're going to stick up for us as well. And, you know, look, the immediate reaction of Jesse Winker isn't, I'm seeing red, I'm going to start a fight. But when the whole Angels dugout is chirping at him, he says, all right, fine, I guess this is how this is going to be. No, I really don't have an issue. I don't really find a ton of fault. And I don't honestly find a ton of fault with the Angels up until the point of dotting Winker. If they throw behind Julio, okay, we disagree with it. They didn't like Mariners throwing it at Trout. Mariners didn't like them throwing Julio, but again, it should have been done. And there's just the ways this could have been prevented, I think, is just like, and that's what the Mariners' instant reaction was. Like, what are we doing? Let's deal with this. And they didn't. There was a good 5 to 10 seconds where they could have done that, and they failed to.
I wonder if the way to handle it for the future, and it's weak because it kind of goes against a lot of it, but you have your pushing and shoving, you just don't throw punches. Because there are a lot of people pushing and shoving and all of that, but the only ones who got suspended, other than Julio, which nobody seems to be able to make heads or tails of, were the two guys that were very clearly throwing punches on camera.
Yeah, and, you know, Crawford flying in, jumping and throwing some Hail Marys is ill-advised. But again, I would rather see that than Jesse Winker goes in and everyone just kind of waltzes over
right
to his aid. I mean, the entire dugout was right behind them. So again, hindsight being what it is, yeah, you should never throw a punch in a game, and you at that point you get what's coming to you suspension wise. But it would have been much more discouraging if Winker walks over to the dugout and says, what are we, you know, okay, fine, here we go, what do you guys want to say, and he's all by himself. So again, I'm not finding a ton of fault with the Mariners here. It's not like I'm looking at this and you know, kind of scolding them for how they handled it. It's just ultimately a bummer when you look at they're the only team that got hit and they also are feeling the biggest penalty from it. So that's a shame, again, given that the Angels should have stopped it sooner and the umpires should have handled the business and done their jobs better as
well. Our last thing for you. Are you more surprised that the robot microchip inside Mike Trout was programmed for him to say something about it after the game on Saturday? Or are you not surprised because the perhaps chemically enhanced portion of Mike Trout got so angry after the game on Saturday?
Well, we do know as a fantasy football commissioner, he likes to be passive aggressive and stir the pot. So I think we know that's part of his DNA now. And so, yeah, there's no denying that Mike Trout played a huge role in this. And he could have said, God, I know it wasn't intentional, but you never want your tower buzz. Like, that's not a fun feeling as a hitter. And, you know, so, and you maybe you would have loved Eric Swanson to be more emphatic about, I didn't mean to. I'm trying to pitch the guy up and in. I didn't have any control of my fastball. But, you know, he sort of played it down the middle of the road as well, as opposed to, like, you know, trying to be outwardly apologetic to, you know, the best player in the game. But, yeah, Mike Trout absolutely played a role. And the whole Justin Upton layer of this that Jen Mueller reported, and I know he was on with Bob and Wyman on Monday, you know, that, like, I can't for the life of me understand, like, I'm supposed to accept their apology and understand that it's unintentional, but yet they can't, you know, respect the same thing.
Again, I kind of understand that. You're Justin Upton, he's Mike Trout. Like, I do sort of understand that. Different rules.
Sure.
Like, sorry, Justin Upton doesn't play by the same rules as Mike Trout. He's Mike Trout. He's one of the best in the game, and he gets protected differently than a guy who's on his way out of the league.
Well, that's different. I think that the protecting him is fine. The, like, not being able to even entertain the thought that it was unintentional is what I'm saying.
No, I agree.
Like I said, whether I understand the whole Angels organization and every Angels fan being upset and saying, hey, unintentional or not, there's going to be consequences. And that was the Julio pitch. Okay. The message was sent, message was received, and it was done after that. Even Julio, like, kind of looked around, was like, all right, okay. You know what I mean? Like, he handled it tremendously. And that's where it should have ended. So I'm not even – I have no issue, regardless of what happened with Swanson and what his intentions were. You can't do that. And that's what the Angels' stance is. Totally get it. But Joe, you get one shot.
Good stuff. Thank you. And thank you for setting me straight on my idiocy on Twitter the other day. I appreciate it. I've already taken an L here this morning for not knowing that that was John Boy. But I'm getting old, and these are the things that happens. And it'll happen to you, too. So thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. I appreciate you, man. I'll talk to you next
time. There you go. There's Joe Fan. The great Joe Fan, we should say. And you can find him on Twitter at Joe_Fan, and that'll take you to his podcast and YouTube page and all the other ways to see what Joe is up to. So, yeah, that was good. And yes, I've seen a bunch of texts from people saying, hey, what about last night? What happened with Trout? He did get the tower buzzed again. Was it the White Sox?
Yeah, well, it was by Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly, right? Came up and in a little bit. Yeah, dude, everyone's going to come up and in on Mike Trout because that's how you get out Mike Trout. But I think, again, what the Angels would say is, if you've got the command to do it, okay, you can come inside. But if you don't have the command, then you're going to get somebody else on your team hurt. And it's a little warning. Hey, you can throw inside to Mike Trout and up. But if he gets away from you, just know that someone else on your team may be taking one in the ribs.
They're playing with fire.
So your other option is to find another way to get out Mike Trout. And that's sort of the back and forth of baseball. I get some of that. I don't have a problem with that at all. I get that. That's what you do when you've got a superstar on your team. You protect him at all costs. Fine. What you don't get to do is start an opener and come out with a, you know, get two different guys for. I mean, it was too much. Anyway, we're not going to spend all day talking about it today. In fact, let me switch gears here and talk a little football. So I alluded to this the other day, but I don't think I get a chance to play the sound. And I want to do it because it is interesting as you're trying to figure out who the next quarterback of the Seahawks is going to be. And if you were like me and you believe there's no chance that it's going to be Drew Lock or Geno Smith unless the Seahawks are stymied in their attempt to get someone else, then you're kind of curious about specifically Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo. And in various ways, both guys kind of jumped into the news here in the last couple of days. So I want to focus on Jimmy for a minute, who I think in a lot of ways, I said earlier, or maybe it was last week, that he is the guy that probably fits the Seahawks best, right? Taking us through Robert Turbin's view of what is Pete looking for? And he said, well, Pete's looking for a guy who doesn't turn the ball over, converts on third down. And when you look at the four possible candidates, Jimmy kind of stands out as being the best at that over the course of his career. Okay, fine. Well, then you think about what John Schneider likes, and, you know, it's a guy who tilts the field, tilts the room, leadership, all of that. And Lewis Riddick had told us, oh, Jimmy G's a great leader, and he was a captain and really, you know, beloved in San Francisco, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's, I guess, a dissenting view on this. Yesterday, we talked about a dissenting view on the brawl. Well, here apparently is a dissenting view on Jimmy G, and this comes from Martellus Bennett, brother of Michael, former tight end, and I guess this story stems from the time they were both in New England together, and it must have been when Brady was suspended, is my guess.
Suspended? Did he get hurt during that stretch?
Yes. I feel like if you remember, Brady was out, what, four games he missed for Deflategate?
Yeah.
And during that time, Jimmy was supposed to start. I think he started one game or two, something like that, and then I want to say it was Jacoby Brissett who ended up coming in for him and starting a couple of games also.
Sounds right.
So that's kind of my memory of it. It was a while ago, and I wasn't paying, like, rapt attention. But so anyway, let me play you this. This is Martellus Bennett on the Double Coverage podcast, and then you'll get a Julian Edelman's follow-up on this. So first of all, here's Martellus Bennett.
Bro, we lost two games. One of them was because Jimmy Garoppolo was being a and trying to quit before us on the last – decided not to play right before the game, so we went out there. Jacoby came out and played with a thumb and played his heart out, but Jimmy was just being a about it all, and he's still being it. Like, that's why you can't win with a for a quarterback, first of all. So, like, that was the whole thing with him. He didn't want to come out and, like, do anything because his agent was trying to protect his body or some that, which I can't fault him for that.
I can't fault him for that.
But I'm going to.
But, you know, I'm going to call him a name and probably, get everybody. And it may hurt him and his ability to get a job now. Anyway, so that's Martellus Bennett. I'll address it. Let me play you the Julian Edelman first, and then we can sort of address whether we.
Was it on the same show?
No. So then Julian Edelman goes on the I Am an Athlete podcast.
Okay.
And they ask him to read those quotes, which he does. And then he kind of responds and gives his thought on it.
Week 3, like the first quarter against the Buffalo Bills or the Jets, and he hurts his non-throwing shoulder. Jacoby came in, led us to a win. And the next week, but in the game, Jacoby...
Was that a big deal, like the non-throwing shoulder?
I mean, I don't know. We're all football players here. But Jacoby broke... He tore his ligaments in his thumb in the win against the week three team. And so we go into week four, and, you know, I guess, you know, Jimmy was practicing and then, you know, decided not to play. And Jacoby played with, you know, no ligaments in his thumb, which you can't do that as a quarterback. You can't grip. And if it's your left, and a lot of guys got mad about it. A lot of guys got mad. I'm not going to lie, I got mad about it. And, you know, I can understand why Marty thinks like that.
All right.
Yeah, that's kind of a lot.
Two offensive guys that rely on him not sticking up for him.
Yeah. So when I first heard about the sound, before I heard the sound, my initial reaction was to defend Jimmy. Now, as I said, this is before I heard the actual sound. I had read the Martellus Bennett stuff, and I'd kind of read the beginning of the Julian Edelman comments, and my thought was, all right, I don't know whether those guys are right. I'm going to trust his more recent time in San Francisco because it's impossible to be compared to Brady, right? And I kind of thought that was the direction this whole thing was going. Like, oh, he's not a leader, this and that. Well, who could be a leader when you're filling in for Tom Brady,
mm-hmm.
right? Really hard gig. It's Brady's team. He's the all-time greatest, you know, player in the history of sports in terms of winning and this and that. Like, you know, you're a placeholder. So you're always going to be compared to the GOAT, and that's essentially impossible. Here's the problem. He's not being compared to Brady.
He's
being compared to Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
And that's where all of a sudden this looks a little bit different. And if you don't let's take away what his teammates thought for a moment, and we'll come back to that, because, Justin, I think there's a really good question there about how important it is to be thought of in one way or another by your teammates. But let's just talk about the availability, because Jimmy obviously has had a major problem with availability over the course of his career that I will admit I've sort of downplayed. And in fact, I did to Brock, maybe it was even yesterday. And I just said, well, what would you rather have? 7 games of Jimmy or 0 games of Jimmy? I mean, like, you know, your alternative is just the guys that you already have. But, you know, when you think about how available Russell Wilson was for the decade that he was here, only missing the games when he hurt his thumb and that was it, right? Or when he hurt his finger, excuse me, the mallet finger.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then, of course, you had the superhuman effort to get through it, and the doctor wrote his note. And,
sure, but, you know, but nobody questioned
never
going to
question
toughness.
His toughness, no. Ever. Guy played through an MCL. Guy played through a high ankle sprain. I mean, never, ever, ever question Russell Wilson's toughness. No mm-hmm. way. And they're questioning his toughness, which leads to his availability, which means that some of Jimmy's availability, at least perception-wise, from his teammates, not from the media or the fans, is of his own accord, not just because, hey, you can't play through a broken such and such. He was unwilling to play through something that, as Julian Edelman says there, hey, we're all football players, non-throwing shoulder, right?
Yeah, yep.
So again, I don't like questioning people's toughness ever. I really try not to, right? But when athletes show you that they're questioning one of their own's toughness, that to me is very telling. So I got to say that is a troubling story, right? And maybe it changed when he was in San Francisco, and maybe his you know, maybe grew up, maybe he learned, because, you know, what we've heard of him in San Francisco is a very different story than this. But that'll give you some pause for sure.
Well, yeah, I think what Marty Bennett is saying basically is that he made the business decision because he was the backup, mm-hmm. and he already was hurt. And it's like, do I end my career like this if it gets worse?
Well, and he knew that there was a decent chance that
he's
based
be
just
going
on
somewhere.
His potential, yep. somebody was going to pay him a tremendous amount of money to come to their team. In this case, it ended up being San Francisco,
and
be a starter.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. Is being soft the ultimate insult?
That's a really, really good question for a football player. I would say, I'm sure Dave Wyman would say yes.
I think he probably would. I think almost anyone would, and I've been thinking about it. Yeah, I think I don't know what insult from player to player could be worse than being called soft.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just in football. because the implication of being called soft is that you're not willing to sacrifice for your teammates, and that makes you a bad teammate.
Yeah.
Right? That other people are sacrificing, and you're not willing to do the same thing they are.
And it's not like you're a tight end who's just going out there running around. You are the leader of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody can affect every single moment of every play, every practice, every film session, it's you. And if they don't believe you or have a perceived lack of toughness from you, they're not going to trust anything you say.
The Mariners had a reliever. What was his name? Rafael Soriano. Do you remember him?
Yep.
Nasty slider, right? And he was a setup guy for a little while, I think for J.J. Putz. And then he ended up being their closer short term. Then he was shipped out of here. But before I covered the Mariners, when I was covering the Red Sox, this is years ago. This must have been 07 or 08, 06, somewhere in that range, 06, 07, 08.
Okay.
I went into the Mariners Visitors Clubhouse at Fenway, and I was talking to, I don't remember who it was, and I probably shouldn't even say if I do. And I was like, hey, you know, tell me about Rafael Soriano. He looks nasty. And we were just chatting, and it wasn't on the air or anything. And he was like, that guy's a wuss. He's the worst. Worst teammate ever.
Wow.
And I was like, what? Why? And he's like, dude doesn't take the ball. Like, he's always just like, yeah, I don't want to go in today, this and that. I'm a little sore. I'm a little this. I'm a little that. So another veteran, I forget who he pointed to, he's like, this guy's arm's practically fallen off, but he's in there taking the reps because Soriano won't do it. And so they hated him.
And that was at the beginning of his career, right? I mean, he was a Mariner. I think
new-ish.
He started of the Mariners.
It was in the early part of his career.
So probably another business decision.
Maybe, or just, you know, hadn't learned just about the game yet, or maybe it's just who he was. But my point in telling the story is not to torture Rafael Soriano, who maybe grew up over the course of his career, but just that this is not unique to football. And I thought about your question, because you texted that to me last night and said, hey, is being soft the ultimate insult? I think it might be. I don't know what's worse than that. Being a cheater in golf, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, specifically that sport where the rules are sacrosanct and all that, maybe in golf being called a cheater. But I don't know. I cheat in golf all the time. So who am I to start ripping on that? No, I just
selfish isn't as bad as being soft.
I don't think so. Well, because they're the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the problem with being soft is that it suggests so many other things about you. Right? Mm-hmm. It suggests that you are selfish, that you are weak, that you aren't capable of doing what the other guys on the team do, that you're a bad teammate. And you put it all together and, geez, I don't know.
Not something I've heard about Baker Mayfield.
No, and how could it be after the way he played through literally a non-throwing shoulder injury?
But to be fair, we hadn't heard anything about Jimmy G either until this, so.
Yeah, well, that comes straight from the players. That's not media. That's not fan creation. That's teammates, and it's a pair of them both kind of telling the same story. So we'll talk some more about this, and, of course, I'll talk with Brock about it at 7:45. Jeff Passan going to join me a little over a half hour from now at 7:30. Before we get there, we may finally be seeing the real version of a player the Mariners absolutely need. That's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.